is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report with my colleagues Joseph Umar, the executive director of Secure Free Society, and Ernesto Araújo, former foreign minister of the Republic of Brazil. We begin with Joseph Umar's new piece at National Interest. The left's winning streak in Latin American presidential races screeched to a halt April 30th with the election of Santiago Piña, an economist and conservative member of Paraguay's ruling Colorado Party. Piña's election gives center-right Latin Americans reason to hope that the tide is turning against the socialist wave that has swept through the region in recent years. Joseph, a very good evening to you. The Colorado Party in Paraguay, this is a small state, but it's traditional and it has very good positioning to trade with major economies, Brazil and Argentina. Is there an explanation why an economist and a conservative won a race where we've seen nothing but wins, wins, wins for the pink tide these last 2 years? Good evening to you, Joseph.
Good evening, John. I think there's several factors as to why Santiago Peña is now the president-elect of Paraguay. I think chief among them is the major other contenders that were running in the election got sanctioned, and so they pretty much got disbarred from running. I'm talking about Hugo Velasquez, who is the current vice president. Early on, he was considered to be a front runner under the Colorado Party banner to succeed President Mario Abdo, being his VP, and then he got sanctioned and pretty much got removed from contention. And then I think the other factor really is Santiago Peña is a very charismatic politician. I mean, if you've met, I met him before, and he's young, he's intelligent, he's well-spoken, he connects well, he's telegenic. And then his opposition candidate, Efrain Alegre, was the opposite. He was not really likable. He comes from the old guard. He said he said some things that were a little too aggressive at the tail end of the campaign. So I think that this was a good election for Santiago Peña. I think, obviously he won the election. And the point of my article in National Interest was to essentially highlight two things. Now that we broke the string of leftist victories in presidential elections in Latin America, five out of the last six were won by leftists in the region. It's now, there's discussions about perhaps a rightward shift in the region. And that could happen. The front runner of the Guatemala elections, at least until recently, was a conservative candidate. The front runners of the Argentine elections that are later this year are also center-right candidates. So my point to the article is to say that if the conservative right, if the center right wants to come back to power, or if they do come back to power in Latin America in 2023, they need to learn from the lessons of the past, of the previous conservative presidents that have governed the region over the last 10 years in several countries. And those lessons are two. The first is, they're very good at policies. And I think the right in Latin America generally is better at policy than the left. But they're not necessarily good at popular messaging. They don't know how to communicate their policies to a broad audience inside their countries or even in the region. And this is something I think that was a detriment for presidents like Mauricio Macri in Argentina or Iván Duque in Colombia or Sebastián Piñera in Chile. And I think that they need to put more attention. They need to put more emphasis on communications, on making sure that their message gets out. It's not just good to have the good policy. You need to also have good messaging to accompany that. And then the second point that I made in the article was that they need, like the previous conservative presidents in Latin America, particularly in the last 10 years, lacked a geopolitical vision. Their foreign policy was erratic. They really didn't move toward the new reality of great power competition. They thought they could trade with China, trade with the United States. They could buy arms from Russia, continue to work with Southcom. And they had this kind of like, we're going to be friends with everybody approach. And that's just not feasible in a period, in a time, in an era where Russia has invaded Ukraine, where China lied about COVID, where China is threatening Taiwan, where Iran's up to shenanigans. So I think that the new right in Latin America needs to have a foreign policy vision that aligns with great power competition. That doesn't mean that they have to cut all ties with these countries, but they don't have to acquiesce to Russian or China coercion or even Iranian subversion. I think that they can be much more realistic and work with other democratic partners in the West. And so that was the point of the article, was to make sure that the new right may have another chance at in Latin America in 2023. Paraguay for sure. We'll see Guatemala and Argentina. But it's not enough to come to power at a time where Latin America is doing really bad. They need to rise to the challenge.
Ernesto, you were in a special position as foreign minister during this period of time where there was a transition from the center-right or the center-center in many of these states to the left. You were in one itself, Brazil. But I mentioned Gustavo Petro for Duque in Colombia. Certainly, Gabriel Boric's rise following the violence of 2019 was a rejection of the centrist policies that were seen wanting in Chile. Is there one? You traveled to all these countries. Could you feel it happening at the time that the right of center was being rejected for the populism of the left?
Yes, good evening, John. I felt back then that there was this lack of geostrategic perception that Joseph so brilliantly mentions and describes in his article. I talked to, of course, foreign ministers, even to a few presidents like President Duque, like President Macri, like President Piñera. I think they had the good disposition to fight the good fight for freedom in the hemisphere. But they fell short of what was needed in terms of commitment in the international relations, in really building a strong alliance with democracies, and putting applying the brakes to the relationship with China. So, I mean, modestly from my point of view, tried to bring this about in my work, in the work in the PROSUL, which we formed back then, several meetings of the Lima Group that discussed Venezuela and other issues, in order to try to raise the consciousness that this is all a common phenomenon. You cannot discuss the situation independently in each country, because the project of transforming Latin America into a narco-socialist bloc is a joint project, and it comes especially from the Havana and from Caracas. A second aspect is that it's not about socialism versus capitalism. It's about the alliance of socialism with crime, with organized drug trafficking, of course, and other aspects of a hybrid war. And the importance of the external actors, especially China, but also Russia and Iran together. As long as we have China as a more an actor of more influence than the U.S. in Latin America, it's very hard to go back to economic and political freedom in the region, because China is trying to reformat the world and, of course, Latin America according to its model, according to its interests. And this has to do with consolidating narco-socialist corrupt governments across Latin America. So back then, I mean, we tried to make those points. And inside Brazil, I had to fight a lot to try to raise consciousness about this, that we had to dismantle the Chinese influence machine in the country. And we couldn't do that. And the result is that Lula is back in power, because even people in the right and center right in Brazil had that notion that, the São Paulo Forum is a conspiracy theory. China only wants to do business. This is all ideological. And that approach led to, and in Brazil and other countries, led to the situation we're in now.
Joseph, you were in Colombia, back and forth from Colombia, observing this transition from Duque's government to the present Gustavo Petro, a former, a retired terrorist. Did you feel it happening at Colombia at the time? Because there was disorder in the streets, but oftentimes the strikes and the actions seemed driven by outsiders. Did the Colombians not recognize that?
No, absolutely. I saw Colombia much further along in this process of transitioning from a previously very conservative country, a country that had center-right presidents that did a lot of good for their country, most notably President Álvaro Uribe, to basically shifting not just to the left, but to the radical left, really. Gustavo Petro was a former member of a terrorist group. He's a Marxist. I mean, he's like very extreme for any standard, but even, especially for Colombian standards. So to make that shift, it was evident to me, because the country was under an assault. And that was something that was very hard. I remember when we talked about it on the show, I remember when the protests took place and they began in April 2021 and they extended pretty much throughout that summer. And to say, you know, publicly that, you know, this is a coordinated assault by external actors was considered kind of like a conspiracy theory inside the country. The media, the politicians in the country really didn't want to accept that. And actually, I wrote a report at SFS about this that got some media attention in Colombia. And it was interesting because it was easier for me to speak about it from outside Colombia than to have our friends in Colombia speak about it from within Colombia. It was very difficult. But the result, as Ernesto said, was, you know, you neglect these realities, or you try to characterize them as ideological, and then the result becomes what it is today. And, you know, Colombia is a great example because I started to call it a great example. It's a tragic example because Colombia has some of the biggest capital outflows in all of the region. The money is just pouring out of that country. And two, so are migrants. It's now, I've been told by folks at Customs and Border Patrol at CPB that this last few weeks, Colombia is the second highest nationality on the U.S. southern border, second to only Venezuelans. So that tells you something. People are leaving the country. Money's flowing out of the country. And that's because people are realizing that Gustavo Petro is as bad as everybody said he was going to be.
Speaking with Joseph Umar, Executive Director of Secure Free Society, and Ernesto Araújo, former Foreign Minister of the Republic of Brazil, we're going to turn to the G7 meeting in Japan and surprising reports about Lula da Silva, who he did and did not meet with in conversations with the prosperous of the earth. This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.